podcast.
Good evening. Hello. Whenever you're watching, welcome to We Knows Parenting.
Good evening. I'm Peter McNerney.
And I'm Beth Newell.
And this is our creepiest episode yet, unintentionally. Boy, you know what?
Spooky. You know, actually, I'm going to segue this right into a story I was about to tell you, which is
Well, let me just quickly say that. You just said that because...
Well, right, let me just quickly say that I was going to say something.
Okay, I just wanted to explain why you started so spooky. Because right before, 2 seconds ago, you just turned off all the lights, and we're recording in the spooky dark.
I know, but we can see our screens, and that's fine. Yeah. I have a thing, and I was actually, as telling this to a friend this week, I think once the kids go to bed, I want almost all the lights off, maybe some candles, some dim lights. I think it's really important to relax at the end of the day. And I'm very sensitive if there's like bright lights shining in my face when I'm trying to work towards falling asleep in an hour or two.
I can get behind that. This is part of the reason why I hate my phone so much, because your phone screen does the opposite of that.
Yeah, we all hate our phones, but there's nothing we can do about it.
Hot
we
take.
We have to be slaves.
There's nothing we can do. Don't try to tell me that you quit social media and you got a dumb phone, because you didn't. You're a liar, unless you're not, in which case I don't want to hear it.
I think we can all agree that we're just going to keep jumping to new social media platforms while we trash the old ones as we slowly leave them behind.
But Marco Polo is great. I think this one's different. Like, I'm not going to get addicted the way I did to all of my other ones. You know?
I love Marco Polo. We talked about this on an episode, right? We talked about Marco Polo?
I don't like Marco Polo because I feel like it feels like work.
Oh, but I like that it's just direct, clear communication, and if people start to abuse it, you don't have to watch it all.
You're right, it is better. The major issue with the internet is lack of face-to-face communication. Marco Polo, it's all about faces.
Yeah, anyway, the story I was going to tell you before I was gravely interrupted was that
gravely.
Bryn told me last night that he had a dream that I was hanging out of the washing machine. It took him a while to figure out how to say washing machine, because I guess we don't talk about it enough, but he said the laundry. I was hanging out of it halfway, like my top half of my body was hanging out of the washing machine.
Okay, this is genuinely scary so far.
And I was telling him to finish a banana. And then he and I both started crying. And he was telling me this story, and then he was
terrified.
I think he was, I don't think this was a fun dream for him, but he was trying to lighten it up in the telling, and he's like, it's funny because you're a grown-up and you were crying. I think it really subconsciously shows what he's processing about these new boundaries we've been setting.
Well, boy, this connects to something that just happened. I put them to bed, and so I made the grave mistake of exercising today. And
and your body's not equipped.
Yeah, every time it's been a while and I exercise, I don't know, like releases all the toxins or I get dehydrated. And later in the day, I just start to feel so terrible. So I did bedtime feeling like a dead person. I was like, all right, in bed. But
that's why one of my New Year's resolutions is just to go for more walks.
Bold.
I really want to get outside in the sunlight in the wintertime, so I don't go slowly insane. And I feel like walking is a manageable resolution for me right now.
I walk an hour a day.
Okay, you're amazing at walking.
Well, I guess I won't drive you to the train anymore, if that's what you're saying.
I have to say quickly, I was getting ready this morning and you took a phone call and I heard you say, well, I got to drive my wife to the train, which is something we had not talked about, but I really appreciated that you saw me in that moment and knew you had to drive me to the train.
Well, I was outside and it was so cold. And I know you hate the cold.
I hate it. I hate everything about our winter
lives.
I was
like, she's going to ask me, and I love my wife. What can I say?
Wow.
It was a fake phone call. I staged the whole thing. So you thought I was good.
Well, keep it up because I like it.
So I was putting Fred to bed and he like didn't want books. He wanted to read a story, maybe want something different. They can't agree. And so I was like, we started talking about compromise, which is a waste of time to try to explain to a 2 and a 4-year-old. But I was like, all right, we're going to pick a book. Brandon, what about this book? And it's the, we're going on a bear hunt. And he goes, no, it's too scary. It's going to give me nightmares.
That's what he said to me last night about the book called A Spooky Pair of Underwear. And also like half of the books, including...
Wasn't all the woman who swallowed a fly was too scary?
The Hilda Learns to Dance. What's it called? Hilda's Always Dancing?
I haven't read that one.
Hilda Must Be Dancing is like a hippo that's dancing. And he also included that on his list of books that would give him bad dreams.
You know what book he picked that would not give him bad dreams?
What?
Leonardo the Terrible Monster. Can I just say we together, Brent and I, created a really excellent new fart bit. It goes like this. And he's like, don't scare me, monster. And I go, oh, I'm going to scare you because I am a monster. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, was that me? And then they laugh hysterically. And I go, anyway, what was I doing? Oh, I was going to scare you because I am a monster. Oh, my gosh. And this is a never-ending bit of laughs. But Bryn started doing the bit, and he's so good at it. He's so funny. That adjustment, he goes, was that me? I am so sorry. I gotta record him and put it on the podcast.
I found something last night that helped me feel more engaged in the storytelling, which is that I had a lot of my characters burst into song to explain their wants and needs, and I felt more like into the story, like.
This is the story you were making up?
Yeah, because I was like, okay, we're going to like call back this chorus from this song later in the story. And it just like felt
That's great.
More freeing to tell the story that way. I wasn't thinking about it. I was just making up a song.
When you're tired and you're trying to tell a story, it just becomes laundry list story. Or like, and then we did this, and then we did that.
Well, I noticed that I start recycling like nursery, like old, like archetypes of stories. Like, yeah. I'm like, and then he had to climb on a fox's back to cross the river. Like, it's just like stuff that's like clearly you've heard in multiple stories at some point. You know what I mean?
My favorite thing is I just start and then I'm like, and then he went, oh yeah, Bryn, where did he go? And I just have Bryn prompt the next thing and he's always surprising and better. And then it inevitably becomes about farts. Which is my fault. We have really filled their lives with fart jokes, and they've embraced it.
They love farts. It is like one surefire way to take them out of a bad mood is just like someone brings up farts.
Maven was screaming. I did this, and I was just like, no, Maven, listen. If we're going to try to go, oh, I am so sorry. And she completely forgets. Yeah. Distraction. You can't talk him into anything. This is what I've discovered. This is not a lot of parents know this.
Well, parents who read books about parenting would know that.
Yeah, that you like. Let me, especially when I'm explaining it again. That what a trap! They're just using their power to keep you your attention on them, and they're winning when you try to re-explain.
I had a thing last night where I was holding their door shut to try to keep Maven inside for bedtime.
Cool, lock him in.
One of our constant chores. And she was crying and crying, and I was like really proud of myself. And then she suddenly was like, I gotta go potty. And I was like, okay, I gotta open the door. And the look on her face was so surprised. And I was like, she's gonna use this against me.
She used it tonight.
Yeah, but she legitimately did have to poop a lot. So it wasn't a trick in the moment.
She did pee just now. And then she got in, and then she walked back in bed herself, and I laid down with her and she fell asleep.
Yeah.
I had to go potty. So I want to say the big thing that happened this week that sort of got to me. No, this is not a how much my children enrage me. This is one of the how much I love them stories. So Bryn, you bought Bryn. You actually should tell part of this story. You bought Bryn a pair of sweatpants. They're blue sweatpants that have like four racing stripes down the side.
And oh yeah,
one of those stripes is pink.
Yeah, and it's like them, right? A very cute pair of royal blue sweatpants that have racing stripes on the side, and it's like, you know, green, red, pink, and white. I don't know. But one of those stripes happens to be pink.
Yeah, it's like a rainbow stripe. So you tell the story of him coming home.
So he was actually fine when he got home, and then he probably took the pants off to go to the bathroom or something and then didn't put them back on. But at some point in the night, he just became enraged and was holding the pants and he was trying to throw them out the front door of our apartment. And we have like a little child lock handle on the door, which the kids can technically break off, but it's hard for them to turn the doorknob.
Yeah.
And he went crazy trying to open it, and he like knocked the thing off the doorknob that keeps him inside. And so I was finally just, I could tell this was like a losing battle, and the stakes were not super high. Like I was like, okay, I'll let him leave his sweatpants in the hallway of our building. So he like threw them outside as if that was the trash, but it's literally still in our building. So then I was like trying to figure it out, and I kind of knew right away there was like an issue with them being new pants. It was the first day he wore them. And obviously there's a pink stripe, and we know pink has been an issue at daycare. And I was like getting it out of him. And I was like, did somebody say something about your pants? He's like, no, yes. And then he's like, I was like, okay, what did they say? And he was like, someone said, I'm trying to remember what he said, but basically what it amounted to was like, this kid at daycare who's around his age was telling him that like pink is for girls or something. I don't even remember.
I mean, yeah, that was certainly the gist of it. And like, this is a kid who's a little older than him, but basically the same age, and like has an older brother. And
it's also a weird, the dynamic has clearly shifted because his best friend has left daycare now to go to a different preschool. So they can see each other on the weekends, but they're not there together during the day. And now, instead of three boys the same age, there's just two, and it feels like the dynamic has shifted more into Bryn being bullied slightly.
Yeah.
Because it's not the first thing that's come up between them.
So I had a talk with Bryn. You told me this, and then I tried to casually bring up Bryn. I was like, hey, because I came home and found his pants hanging on our doorknob on the outside. Did you put them on the doorknob, or was
that
a neighbor?
No, that was probably our lovely next-door neighbor.
Yeah, so... So I go and I go, what's with these pants? And you told me the story. And I told Bryn, I go, Bryn, I found these pants outside. Why were they out there? He goes, I don't like them. And then he told me, I was like, did somebody say the pink wasn't cool? And, you know, I'm trying to do this thing where, like, there's a big red flag, obviously, for us.
Well, I think it was also, like, what's upsetting for us, I think, is not, like, we're not trying to force him to wear pink. And he doesn't necessarily, like, he's not obsessed with pink, but at the same time, he's expressed a strong desire for pink recently, with Maven being so into pink.
Yeah.
So it's like you just want him to feel his own feelings and not be influenced by any of us.
Right, yeah. We're not like, that's the one thing we've ever bought him that has pink on it. But the point is, we don't want him suddenly being like, you know, there's something to that, like, girls do this, boys do this. And obviously kids like to categorize, but as the incredible progressive parents we are, you know, we want to be able to keep our kids' eyes open. They're like, yes, you know, that's some kids. Yeah, not all kids. And so for some older kid to be like, pink is for girls, who are making fun of your pants? I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, you were really trying to,
I was trying to keep
talk him
cool.
into it, but I feel like you were kind of making it into more of a thing than it needed to be.
Well, what I learned from that was, I was like, nothing I say is going to have a bigger effect on him than the emotional experience he had of somebody teasing him.
Yeah.
But even bringing that little, like, well, you can't explain to a kid, like, you should stand up for yourself. No.
What he was basically saying was, like, I hate these pants. I'm never going to wear these pants again. He had already, like, internalized. It was like...
Yeah, and he also told me that he wanted a ponytail because Maven has all of her, like, like her scrunchies, her hair binder things.
Mm-hmm.
And Bryn.
East Coast people don't say hair binder, but.
You know what? I grew up saying hair binder.
It's a hair elastic.
In Minnesota, but I'm starting to think that maybe no one ever said that. If you're from the Midwest, do you ever say hair binder? I feel like the girls in my grade did. Anyway, Bryn like made a little ponytail because his hair is sort of long right now. And he goes, I want to have my own ponytail. And he goes, but not at school. I won't do it at school, just on the weekend.
And that is something I kind of said to him about the pants, which is just like, I was trying to explain to him instead of like fully stifling himself that like maybe he doesn't want to wear pink pants when he's around like actual bullies, but maybe we can keep the flame of his pink love alive on the weekend.
So you've taught him to be ashamed and to hide his joy.
Because he was in a moment of just being like, I'm never going to wear these pants again. And I just, because I think if he was around other people wearing them, that would, and he realized it's not a thing in normal non-bully society, then he might come back to wearing them and be less emotional about it. But
it's true. But, I realized that like, boy, bullies do have a lot of power because the emotional memory of like feeling out of place and ashamed is so much stronger than your parents telling you that you're great. Well, you should stand up for yourself.
Especially when you're like, hey, I'm a cool dad and I think pink is cool.
Hey, cool dad here. Just real quick. I love pink. It's my favorite color. So you should wear it. You won't get ridiculed.
Don't listen to the kid with the big cool gun on his shirt at school. This next segment is called We Knows What They're Saying. It's where we talk about some things that our kids have been saying. So, Peter, you're going to talk here about...
What am I going to talk about, Beth?
I'm talking about
a Christmas present. You okay over there?
So we paused between segments and I looked at my text messages and I had some really shocking news that I'm still distracted by, but I'm not going to get into it because it's someone else's news. But anyway.
It was like, we're laughing at how it was dramatic. It was like two things, unrelated.
Two dramatic things on top of each other. Anyway.
And now we're going to be real carefree.
So Peter's been doing this very cute thing where he has a journal for our children. What's it called?
This is a present I got for Bryn for Christmas. It's Q&A a day for kids, a 3-year journal.
So every day it has questions that you ask the kids and then they answer.
And you write it down and you do this for 3 years. So when we come back in a year, we'll see how they've aged.
Assuming we ever come back to it, but yes.
It's a really good distraction in the morning. So it's one question a day. And so like any good parents, we're going to read our kids' journal on a podcast. Like the first day is simple, write the date and then you say, write your name. And Bryn, who can write his name, started the B all the way to the right side of the page and realized quickly that he didn't have room for any other letters. So he did the R below it and then he did the Y to the left of it.
Let's get to the questions.
Anyway. Maven tried to write her name too. All right, so the first day, here we go. What is your favorite thing to do with friends? Bryn said, play with them. Maven said, immediately after, play with them. Okay, solid start, right? Next day, what are you excited about? And Bryn said, maybe parties do? I didn't question what he meant. I just wrote it down.
I get what he's going for.
Yeah, what does he mean?
Maybe parties do, like get excited.
Maybe parties do get me excited. I don't know. I've never been to one.
He's saying like maybe if there were parties, I would feel excited about something.
Maybe if he had a real birthday party for me. Maven said, no.
I love what you can tell from these, which is that Maven is really not a morning person, and it shows in her answers.
Yeah, well, Maven's not a I need something from you, so respond person. what animal do you feel like today? Why? Bryn said, gorilla, because I'm stretching. And at the time, he was stretching. Maven said, no.
Yeah.
January 5th. Describe a time when you were mad. Bryn, yesterday, because I didn't listen at home. Which actually was a good answer, because what he means is he didn't listen, and so I got upset, and then he got upset, and then we screamed, and then he kicked me. And then I had to hold him down because he was trying to stomp and kick and all that.
My favorite part of the day is restraining my son physically in a bed.
So he can't kick the wall and floor.
Yes.
Maven said, I want this, the pen I was using to write the answers with. I've just decided no matter what Maven says, I'm going to write down the answer.
I like how she's consistent with her attitude.
Yeah, she has not yet answered the question.
That's my girl.
January 6th. If you could take a trip anywhere in the world, where would you go? Bryn, to the diner? This was 5 minutes before we were on our way to the diner to eat with his friend. Maven today mixed it up a little bit. She looked at me, got very quiet, looked out of the top of her eyes, and she whispered, no. January 7th. What would you like to do but can't do yet? Bryn, walk in the living room.
What?
As he was walking in the living room. Maven, I asked her, and then she just hugged you.
Yeah.
What are we learning about our kids in this segment right now? Is that this book is maybe too old for them?
I think their answers are funnier than if they were older, but I don't know.
That's true. All right. You ready? Here's where it gets good.
Okay.
January 8th. Here's where they clearly know what they're talking about. Who is your hero? Why? Bryn points to me. And then I say, why? And he said, because you are my daddy. And then I cried for an hour and a half.
Wow.
Inside. Maven, I just wrote down blank stare.
I think that's like, she's
found a pattern now.
She's critiquing Bryn's answer to your face.
She just locks eyes and then doesn't answer and waits for you to look away. All right, January 9th. The really correct, wonderful answers continue. I wish I had more blank. Bryn's answer, daddy. Wait, does that mean because he doesn't have enough daddy? Or he just can't get enough of this daddy?
You tell us. We weren't there.
Maven silently eats Raisin Bran. Okay, so yes,
she has her priorities in order because it's the morning. No one should be talking to you.
It's not always the morning. This instance
usually
it was.
It is, but
it was.
She's trying to eat a Raisin Bran.
I'm trying to see what the age limit is on this book. Doesn't say, so we're doing it right. Okay, ready for this? January 10th. What are you especially good at? Bryn, with no hesitation, screamed, puzzles! And I was like, yeah, you are. Bryn is very good at puzzles. Always has been. Maven says, I'm good at puzzles too.
She's right.
She's right in his first real answer. Our kids are good at puzzles. So I was like, all right, they figured it out. Here we're cooking. Here we go.
Yeah, more of these questions need to create competition between them so that they'll both answer aggressively.
Yes. Maven took a little bit of a backslide on January 11th. Has anyone ever called you a name? Tell me about it. Bryn immediately said, he called me Kaka. The same bully who made fun of his striped pants.
He called me Kaka.
That's all he said. He called me Kaka. And then I had to get out of him. Who called you Kaka?
We know.
We know who. We knows. Maven shook her head no. And, oh my gosh, we have three more. We're up to date here. January 12th. How do you feel when your friends play with your things? Bryn. No hesitation on this answer. Sad, because my toys are special.
That's something he heard someone say once and be like, okay, you don't have to share this special toy. And now all of his toys are special. That's
the
like
kid
when
is smart.
When we were cleaning up toys to give to our friends, the toys that our kids never play with, as soon as I went to start grabbing them, Bryn was like, those are my favorite.
That's my favorite thing I've never seen before.
It'd be like a random little fish toy. Like, it was just like...
From a broken baby's mobile.
Yeah, he's like, that's my favorite toy.
I can't live without it. Maven said, whispered, better. Don't know what that means.
Better.
January 13th. Blank is a silly thing I did lately. Bryn screamed yesterday. It's very specific. I don't know what he was talking about. Maven hugs daddy's arm and smirks. This one was saucy but positive.
There was a time last week when I went to pick them up at daycare and I could hear the kids all screaming inside.
That happened we were there together.
Oh, we were there together. Yeah. Okay. And then he was like, I was like, what was with the screaming? And he was like, oh, people were screaming. And then he was like, it was me.
People were screaming. Guess which people? Just kidding. It was me. All right. And here it is. January 14th. Who helps you when you're sad? Bryn names his best friend, because when I cry and he looks at me crying, he says, why are you crying? And then I also cried for an hour and a half because that was so sweet. Maven stares in silence while eating a bagel.
She's consistent.
There we go, people. That is the first 14 days of the year. And our kids' intimate personal thoughts and journals. So we'll keep up with that.
I'm sure those people who don't know our kids treasured every moment of that.
Yeah. Really paints a picture, I feel like, with their words. And that's We Knows What They Say. All right. Now we're going to do a little listeners want to knows. Beth, somebody sent you a thing.
Yeah, so I had multiple people send me the same thing in response to last week's episode, which is a pretty cool post some of you might have seen online. It's the Humans of New York Instagram account, which is that guy who goes around New York City and photographs people, and then he sort of quotes what they're saying. So he photographed this guy, this dad, and he wrote, this is coming from the dad, it says, my kids are going to be shocked when they become adults and learn that I've basically been playing a character for their entire lives. All day long, I have to pretend like I care about everything. I'm a laid-back guy. I could actually care less if they make their beds or if they scratch the walls. But my character has expectations. He says what he means and he does what he says. My character hates video games. He barely allows them in the house. And he'll banish them immediately when rules are broken. But I actually play Mario Kart all the time when they're at school. Last week, my character got really upset. He threatened to throw away candy if the kids didn't stop wrestling. When the wrestling continued, he was forced to follow through. I really thought it was a safe move. It'd been so long since Halloween. I was sure there'd be nothing good left. Maybe just some chalky wafer things. But the kid was saving the best stuff for last. It was brutal, full-size candy bars. There were tears. I didn't want to do it, but my character had to keep his word. Then later, I fished them all out of the trash and ate them all. So I think that's really a lesson in what we're trying to practice this these days. I appreciate that.
I relate to that so hard in some ways, in that I feel like this probably is true for a lot of parents where you have this little imposter syndrome. Is that when you see yourself as the imposter?
Yeah. Imposter syndrome means you don't believe you have what it takes to be there.
Right. You know, when you become a parent, it feels, at least for me in the beginning, was this like, you're playing the part of a parent, and then like everyone is going to find out that you actually don't know how to do this.
Yeah.
Obviously nobody does. And it feels like, you know, we brought home a baby. It felt like, oh, look at us. Like, it's like we're wearing a costume.
You were like, we did it.
Isn't this strange?
This week, I saw the second video. I believe the second time it's happened, that where a woman gives birth to a baby in a car and her husband or partner says, we did it, on the video, after he sits there and watches her.
I did not say that when our kids were born.
I mean, you said some things.
I'm gonna breeze past it. I did tell a cop we took care of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I was making a joke at the time. If you didn't listen to our birth story episode, Maven was born in the car. I called the cops, and I was standing outside the car, and the cops came. And they pulled up and they said, someone's having a baby. And because I am a trained comedian, I looked him in the eye very casually and I said, we took care of it. And I pointed.
You're nothing else if not a trained comedian.
If there's nothing else.
I do think that sort of, that imposter syndrome thing is something that happens to everyone at all different phases of life. And we're all just, you know, merely players. All the world is a stage.
But I will say, recently, I mean, I've always sort of felt daddish, and I've read that way. I feel I've come into my own. And boy, I'm
this,
a dad.
This is the part you were born to play, baby.
I have memorized my lines. My blocking is down. And I can do this in my sleep. And like, while we're still...
Children, come put your entries in the journal.
It's time for father to record your thoughts. It's journal hour.
Your dreams. Followed by din-din. Aspirations. What gets you excited?
Yes, no, we don't get out of bed once it's bedtime.
You're the James Lipton of parenting.
Yes.
Why do you crave the future days?
We don't hit. You literally kicked me in the crotch, and I'm trying not to scream bloody murder.
Let me tell you something about staying in your bed.
I'm going to throw up. Really was a hard kick to the crotch. This is a real thing that happened to me this week.
You're going into your Ron Burgundy.
I'll tell you what.
Okay. Anyway, I thought that was a fun little Humans of New York post.
I love it. I loved it.
Thank you for everyone who sent that to me.
I love video games, guys.
Yeah, you Part do.
I feel so garbage right now because I got on the exercise bike. And I'm only allowed...
We get it. You exercise.
Yeah, I'm like so good at it. We have an exercise bike, but I've made a rule for myself that I'm not allowed to play video games unless I'm on the exercise bike. So I was on the exercise bike, and just to say the word exercise bike one more time, because I've said it so many times, exercise bike.
Where were you?
Here, in this room.
Sitting on what?
The exercise bike.
Okay.
And I played video games for an hour and 12 minutes. And wow. I biked that whole time. That's why I'm dehydrated and feel terrible.
You know, something I could tell you from being a woman who thinks about these things is that you could drink more water.
You get off my back. You were already on my back while I was exercising on my exercise bike.
What?
And beforehand, I drank a full glass of water.
Oh, you mean subconsciously I was on your back.
Yeah, you're always right there. You're whispering. And most of the time when you're on my
You
shoulder,
sound so accusatory. You're like, look what you made me do. Drink water before I exercised.
I got to say, half the time, the little Beth on my shoulder is just saying, well, did you drink water? And I'm like, ugh, fine. I drink a lot of water. But this always happens when I haven't exercised in a while. Exercise bike. Welcome back to Listeners Want to Knows. We got another email. I got an email here that I thought was interesting. They were going to read this. It comes to us from Della. She says, hi, Peter and Beth. She actually said, hi, Beth and Peter, and I reversed it because I don't know how to read. First of all, I love your show, It's been amazingly fun to hear you guys banter and discuss your amazing kiddos and the crazy situations they put you in. I recently became a mother. Well, actually 10 months ago. Congratulations, but it still seems quite recent. I enjoy listening to you guys because it helps me feel like maybe I knows parenting also, even though I'm just starting to figure it out. I love that you guys speak so honestly about the ways you respond to all of the ins and outs of parenting. Thank you very much. I have been listening to all the controversial Would You Know segments recently, winky emoji, and it got me to thinking. If you take all of the time travel parts away, what they all really come down to is how much you are willing to try to prevent your kids from making mistakes. This led me to a question I was already debating on asking you guys. Let me provide a little context. When I was younger, in middle school and high school, my father was part of a father's group. It was a bunch of guys who got together and chatted about their kids. At the time, I didn't know a whole lot about what they were talked about, but as I have gotten older, I have asked my dad, and he's told me some of what they discussed. One of the things that my dad mentions is something that he seems to disagree with some of the other fathers about. The question related to whether kids would learn best by making their own mistakes, or whether it makes sense as a parent to draw on your vast well of experience and give a lot of advice in order to prevent your kids from making mistakes in the first place. One of the examples he mentioned was a kid who started to get into deep credit card debt when they headed off to college. The father of the child said something to the effect of, "Well, this will be a good lesson for them. They will learn not to get in that kind of debt again in the future." Whereas my father's approach would have been to probably very forcefully let me know what a bad idea he thought it was and probably continue to nag me about it until I stopped. In a lot of ways, I can see the benefits of both of these arguments. There are probably some lessons that kids learn better by experiencing the mistakes on their own. On the other hand, as a parent, why let your kids go through suffering when you know that it's something that they could avoid? I do believe, based on my own experience, that you can still learn the lessons even though you don't make the mistakes. Not to say I never made mistakes in my life. However, the credit card debt one, I haven't. Definitely with coaching from my parents. Also noting my privilege here that I haven't had to. Anyway, as I become a parent and I'm anticipating my little one to grow up into a mistake-making preteen, teenager, young adult, I've been thinking about this question often. What's your take? Is it better to let our kids make big mistakes and therefore learn the lessons themselves, or is it better to sometimes strongly try to prevent them from making that big mistake in the first place? Thanks again for your comedy and insights. You help us all to nose parenting. Della. I just want to say, anyone who sticks a nose in your email, I already like it.
This question does not have an easy answer. I feel like there's so many layers here of like what, you know, your kid's age and ability and what the struggle is they're going through, like what the risk is to their well-being and safety in terms of like when you rescue them. Because I do think there's a lot to be said for letting kids make their own mistakes. But obviously, like, you know, a newborn baby can't feed itself and you kind of have to help your kids over time with different
You're
things.
You're coddling them. Let them make their own mistakes about not knowing where the food is.
Anyway, but even as your kids get older, like different kids have different mental health issues, addiction, different things. And you do, at certain points, you have to know when to not help them and when to help them and when they're like willing to accept your help. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just.
Sure. In general, like given the example that she gave, I'm 100% on her dad's side.
With the credit card debt?
Yeah, I'm like,
I don't know. That's like, that could be really life ruining for some people.
Well, yeah, her dad was the one that's like, don't get in debt.
Oh, okay. I see. I thought you were saying that the dad who was like, you're on your own.
No, that's a great example of like, that's exactly where you life experience is something. And here's a great example. So my dad gave me some very strong advice, which was freshman year, I lived in the dorm in college. In sophomore year, a friend of mine, she was getting an apartment and she was like, you should come stay in this apartment with me. And I'm like, yeah, great, cool. And I called my dad and And he was like, wait, what? Who is this person? You should stay in the dorm. And I was like, no, no, it's going to be great. And I like was so, he was, I was so mad at him because he was not a real strict person. He was all about make your own decisions, but it's like, here's what's going on. And he was really adamant that this was a bad idea. And I was like, you don't know anything. And then he basically told me at one point, he's like, you have to stay in the dorm. But I had already like missed the window for like getting back into the pool. So I told him, I was like, I don't have a spot in the dorm. And so he reluctantly and like pretty upset, like agreed to me for me to move into this apartment. And what followed was the year I made all the big mistakes. Like I'm an adult now and I'm not sure, I don't really understand adult relationships and like, you know, life choices. We won't get into them.
Yeah.
But I've never done anything like horrible in my life, but like all of the things where I'm like, I feel deep shame and regret about things I've done happened that year. And we're sort of attached to that decision. And I know like I hurt people feelings. And because I like didn't understand a lot of things. And it really sort of came. And I realize in retrospect, I think that's what my dad was afraid of and knew better. But like it was too nuanced to explain it to me, like what the problem was. And so that was one where I'm like,
I don't know if he thought it through that much. I think he just was like, he's off campus. This is going to get bad.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't know exactly how,
yeah.
But it left an impression on me where I was like, okay, this is a big deal. So I think I also made the mistake, but having heard it, I think it made it better.
Well, I think we're always trying to strike a delicate balance with our kids, giving them a healthy fear of real threats without keeping them in a constant fear state or overblowing those threats to the point where they don't trust our awareness of threats.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like, I do think as they get older, especially when they get a stronger bullshit detector, like as teenagers, you do have to kind of be careful of like telling them, you know, about things like birth control and drugs and stuff, but not painting such a crazy, like demonic picture of it that they don't trust anything you say anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's I forget where I read this, but it's that the system of in your household, you go from dictatorship to democracy. As your kids get older, mm-hmm. like obviously our kids right now, we are dictators and we should be because they're not old enough to negotiate. These are the boundaries. This is what you do. And I'm going to stay positive and friendly and I'm going to love you. But these are hard boundaries. And that's like the best way we can serve our kids right now is to not have the boundaries be wishy-washy. As they turn into preteens and teenagers, the more important it becomes that you give them room to participate in the rules and to show like to express how things work or don't work for them. So you can agree together what those boundaries are and you give them some ownership over it. And obviously as you get into adulthood, like you're transitioning into that where it's all their decision. And so like I think a big part of this email is the like, how soon do you make that transition to you're all on your
own? Well, I think that part of the challenge is making that a really gradual transition because I think the people who are like being like hard asses throughout high school on their kids, when that kid suddenly has all the freedom of college, they go crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're slowly like loosening the leash a little bit, I think the kids are less likely to do that, you know, they're not in rebel mode the second they get away from you.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about reading this email is Della here has a 10-month-old and she's like, oh my God, what am I going to tell this baby in college? And I think my answer is you really don't need to worry about this right now. It's not a bad thing to think about.
I mean, I'm sure on some level she's dealing with some of the same. Like, it's like, because she's like, okay, do I watch my kid endlessly? When, you know, like, can I leave the room?
Sure, yeah. Maybe I also, what sparks in me is my own, how much I don't look ahead, which I think is a strength and a weakness, in that, like, I'm a very present person. I live for today. I don't get wrapped up into, like, here's my 5-year goal.
You're like the musical Rent.
Exactly. How do you measure a year?
No day but today.
Measuring love. Measuring love. Boy, I just was back in 8th grade. That musical was so important.
Anyway, tell us again why you're great, you were saying.
529,600 minutes.
It's literally the book you're journaling with our kids right now, is that.
How do you measure a year?
How do you measure your preferences as a 40-year-old?
40-year-old. God, I don't know what I was talking about. Oh, yeah.
You're just saying that you're amazing.
Was that what I was saying? I feel like whatever, that's your interpretation of everything I say. Is, yeah, I get it. You're amazing. but that, like, there's obviously maybe some gender stuff in here. I'm like, we're fine. I don't need to worry about things. We'll figure out how to raise kids when we have to, when it happens.
And you're still thinking that.
Yeah. I learned my lessons by making mistakes.
I know I've said this like a broken record a million times, but that is your privilege as a man. That
I already
you get
said that.
To...
I already acknowledged it before you could. The little Beth on my shoulder said, check your privilege. With this, for You're some like... reason, you've got this accent. I don't know what it is, but I'm Beth on your shoulder. I'm not quite like Beth. I'm a little goblin, Beth. She's cool, though.
That was like 3 different accents.
I know. That's why it's very hard to place. I'm Beth. I've to drink some water. You, check your privilege.
You sound like Bing Bong.
Bing Bong. Oh.
Inside Out.
Who's your friend that likes to play? I cry candy. Bing Bong is a great character.
No day but
cry.
Today.
No day. Ha ha.
Okay. All right.
Joy? The Joy? I do a pretty good Richard Kind impression.
Wow.
Go watch Inside Out if you don't know what we're talking about.
Anyway, my husband was a trained comedian.
Who's your friend that likes to play ping pong, ping pong?
Guys, thank you for listening to We Knows Parenting. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at We Knows Pod. You can find us at weknowsparenting.com. Or if you'd like to submit a question, share a story, give some advice, or suggest an impossible parenting hypothetical for our Would You Knows segment, you're welcome to email us at weknowspod@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 347-384-7396.
Before we go, I want to some quick plugs. Tomorrow, which is today, actually, if you're listening to when this episode is being released, the Story Pirates are releasing our second book. It's an incredible book that was based on an idea written by a real-life kid and written by New York Times bestselling author Jacqueline West. It's called Digging Up Danger. If you've got kids in your life, pick it up. Also, the Story Pirates new season of the Story Pirates podcast is launching January 31st. So we got some new eps coming up January 31st. Check that out. But hey, thanks for stopping by, you know, and have a wonderful night because it's still nighttime here. Awkward trailing off ending.
Good evening.
Good evening.